This is Hacker Daily for Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. And today we're talking about StreetLend.com shuts down in response to GDPR, why thinking you're an insomniac is part of the problem, Watson, Tesla, and another AI winter, Stripe launches an easy way to start an LLC, and finally, PodSwap, a tool to grow your podcast audience for free. I'm Dave Zorab.
And I'm Harish Agarwal.
Thanks for tuning in to Hacker Daily, featuring top stories for hackers, founders, and makers. Let us know what you think via email at info@hackerdaily.co or follow us on Twitter at our new handle, Hacker Daily. And don't forget to subscribe and rate us on your podcast app. It really helps.
StreetLend.com, a website that helped neighbors lend items to each other, shut down in what seems to be one of the first documented casualties of GDPR. GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation, a sweeping set of regulations covering data protection and privacy for residents of the EU, is set to go in effect on May 25th. The regulation introduces many restrictions on how data can be obtained, used, and processed as it pertains to EU citizens. Chris Beach, the creator of StreetLend, cites the GDPR as the reason he's shutting down StreetLend, writing, "Unfortunately, the European Union's new GDPR, introduced on 25th May 2018, creates uncertainty and risk that I can't justify taking. GDPR threatens website owners with fines of 4% of turnover, or 20 million euros, whichever is higher, if they do not jump through a number of ambiguously defined hoops. As someone who has been there at the beginning of a few small businesses, I can definitely sympathize with Beach's point of view. Immediately after the launch of my first startup, we received multiple cease and desist letters. Though we didn't believe we were doing anything wrong, our lawyer at the time made the point that justice is expensive." Hacker News commenter P. Dimitar writes, "Complying with something somewhat ambiguous like the GDPR is still an expense of time, money, and risk that many small website owners won't be willing to spare." Of course, this is not to say GDPR is unwarranted or bad for the ecosystem. It's easy to think that the regulation was passed in response to the recent privacy scandals plaguing Facebook, but in reality, it is only now going into effect after a 2-year probationary period. Given that, the regulation seems remarkably prescient. Hacker News writer E.K. Semplar writes of the GDPR, "It may call for a new business model for the internet, and that may seem impossible right now. But do you remember when the EU outlawed environmentally shitty light bulbs and everyone said we were going dark because it was impossible to do anything else? Today, 95% of light bulbs are LEDs because of that." It's worth noting that while the light bulb industry did become much more energy efficient, the biggest light bulb brand in the US today is General Electric. You know, the multinational conglomerate founded by Thomas Edison in 1892. Ultimately, GDPR was not passed to be small business friendly. It was passed to protect internet consumers. And it's still far too early to tell how it'll affect both.
I've always thought of myself as someone who has trouble sleeping, and I don't really think I'm wrong about that. If you ask my friends and coworkers, they'll probably say that I complain about sleep all the time, or that, you know, I'm like tired all the time, despite all the sleep hygiene modifications that I've made over the last few years. I've made changes like stopping all screen usage hours before bedtime, using Flex and Night Shift on my laptop and my phone, and sleeping with my phone in the living room rather than in my bedroom. Even with all those changes, sleep researcher Kenneth Lichtstein published a new study that shows that my attitude itself might be part of the problem. And that's even though my self-diagnosis as a poor sleeper is what led me to make all those sleep modifications in the first place. Apparently, identifying as an insomniac makes it harder to sleep, even when you do manage to get a good night's sleep. According to The Guardian, in a review of research published last year, Lichtstein concluded that non-complaining poor sleepers, that is, folks who sleep poorly but don't gripe about it like I do, don't suffer some of the health consequences, like high blood pressure, that insomniacs normally face. And, in a lovely ironic twist, complaining good sleepers, people who do sleep well but feel like they don't and are pissed about it, suffer the same kinds of depression, anxiety, and fatigue as real insomniacs. The Guardian columnist, unfortunately, doesn't offer many practical tips other than to avoid taking sleeping pills and to try not to be anxious about sleep. But maybe learning not to be anxious about it really does help. User Dr. Fish commented on Hacker News, "This is exactly the Zen moment that fixed my lifelong insomnia. Lying in bed, relaxed with my eyes closed, even if I'm not asleep, leaves me feeling worlds better in the morning than fretting about not being able to sleep. It's something that happened when I forgot about it completely. Once I realized I could literally just lie in bed for 8 hours and be okay, I was able to let it go. It's like a trap that closes tighter about you the more you struggle, and releases if you allow yourself to relax. Once I really got that, sleep became regular and uninterrupted." Another commenter, Talinvor, adds a reasonable recommendation. "This is probably good advice for people who have occasional insomnia, but if you have insomnia more regularly, especially for days at a time, or you consistently don't feel rested despite believing that you've slept, you really should try to talk to a doctor. Not to ask for sleeping pills, although that might be a result, but to start the process of finding out if there's a larger problem that can be treated." Well, while everyone is throwing their sleep advice around, I'll throw my suggestions in too. Most of what I've done is pretty much common sense, but it's worth trying if you haven't already. You can stop using your computer well before bedtime. Definitely use night shift or flux as needed, and get your phone away from your bed. I sleep with it in my living room, and that's made a huge change for me. Drinking less is also a good idea. Regular exercise is also a good idea, as hard as that is. On the recommendation of my doctor, I take a small dose of melatonin every night. I don't really like relying on a supplement to help me sleep, but at least it's not something as strong as a sleeping pill, which I've also tried, and it doesn't really help me rest. Your mileage may vary here, but melatonin really does help me get to sleep faster and sleep more deeply. I also use both earplugs and a white noise machine because I live near a really busy street in Manhattan, and they both help a lot. Finally, my doctor recently recommended cognitive behavioral therapy for sleep. Apparently, there's two online programs that offer research-backed help for insomniacs. But maybe my best sleep hack of all, if you can even call it a sleep hack, was to quit my job. I've had enough trouble with sleep over the years that a lot of my friends and my wife and my family have asked why I never sought out prescription drugs. And the big reason I didn't, besides that I never really felt rested when I was using them, was that it felt kind of wrong to use them. And not because they're not helpful tools or that I had some kind of moral objection, but because I knew that most of my sleep issues were stress-related, and I was choosing to take on an ambitious, stressful job. So it just didn't really feel right to me to voluntarily pick this stressful lifestyle and then medicate myself with powerful drugs in order to maintain it. So for health reasons and a lot of other reasons, I quit. And since I left the job, I have had a lot fewer sleepless nights. And I'm pretty sure I complain a lot less about sleepless nights too. But ultimately, you probably have to ask my wife to get some real data on that.
Roger Schenck, a leading pioneer of artificial intelligence and cognitive psychology in the 70s and 80s, wrote up a blog in response to a recent commercial for IBM's Watson. In it, Bob Dylan can be seen chatting with a computer, presumably powered by Watson, exchanging jokes and insights into Dylan's music. The problem? Schenck says the ad represents exaggerated claims being made by IBM about their Watson program. Schenck points out that IBM has gone beyond the ad and directly made exaggerated statements about the levels of Watson's abilities. He quotes an Adweek article in which Ann Rubin, IBM's VP of Branded Content and Global Creative, said, "You can outthink cancer, outthink risk, outthink doubt, outthink competitors if you embrace this idea of cognitive computing." She went on to say that the commercials were needed to help people understand the new world of cognitive computing. It's easy to write this off as typical marketing hype, overselling a nascent technology in order to generate buzz and interest. The danger, Schenk says, is the possibility that this overhype will lead to what he calls an AI winter. He wrote about a previous drought in AI funding occurring in 1984, saying, AI winter was a result of too many promises about things AI could do that it really could not do. Schenk's writing brings to mind another example of overhype in artificial intelligence, self-driving cars. There have obviously been great strides made in self-driving cars over the last decade, and multiple tech companies are actively testing self-driving technology on the roads. But even the word self-driving reeks of marketing overhype, as does autopilot, a term Tesla uses for its self-driving technology. A recent BBC article reported on the case of Bhavesh Patel, who pled guilty to dangerous driving. A witness in another car filmed him sitting alone in the passenger seat of his Tesla S60 while the vehicle was driving in autopilot mode. Patel said of the incident that what he had done was silly, but his car was capable of something amazing. A Tesla engineer made a statement in response that the autopilot was intended to provide assistance to a fully attentive driver. Now, while it may be tempting to scoff at Patel, the word autopilot, Tesla's word, is obviously meant to evoke capabilities far beyond assistance to a fully attentive driver. And it's also hard to argue that the characterization of Watson as outthinking cancer or having a conversation with Bob Dylan doesn't create a perception that Watson is able to engage in active reasoning, a characterization Schenk calls outright fraud. While I personally don't believe an AI winter can occur at this point, there is just too much money wrapped up at too many big companies to put the rabbit back in the hat, I do worry that consumers will get disillusioned by the mismatch between the hype and the reality of the technology. And that would be a big shame, because the advances made in this field seem incredible. While true autopilot may not happen for some time to come, the idea that I can drive a car in an urban area while hardly touching the steering wheel or brakes is mind-boggling.
Stripe launched a new version of its Atlas program that helps entrepreneurs create limited liability corporations, or LLCs, and start accepting credit cards really quickly. The previous version of Atlas only allowed the formation of C corporations, which have a different taxation structure that can be less favorable to founders who don't plan on raising outside financing. Patrick McKenzie, better known to Hacker News readers as Patio11, wrote in a post announcing the new product, "We started Stripe Atlas as an easy way to create a Delaware C corporation. They are the entity of choice for many investor-backed technology companies, but they're not for everyone. LLCs, on the other hand, are used by many small teams, bootstrap businesses, and side projects seeking a more flexible start. Atlas LLCs are formed in Delaware and are specifically designed to make conversion to a C corporation as simple as possible should the founders decide they want to raise funding in the future." The response on Hacker News, Product Hunt, and elsewhere was really positive. There are a lot of caveats that came up in the comment thread, so I'll point out a few of them here if you're thinking about starting a company. User NodeSocket posted on HN, "Be aware that if you are quote-unquote doing business in California, which means that you live there, you also have to file as a California foreign entity and pay the absurd anti-small business flat tax of $800 a year." And in a response to a question about non-US founders forming an LLC, Taylor Francis from Stripe wrote, "Owning an LLC can expose non-US owners to very complicated tax situations. Non-US members may be subject to US personal income taxes on the company's income. Some non-US founders choose to form C corporations because the company is taxed on the company's income." Francis's advice seems reasonable for anyone forming a new business. He says, "This gets complicated fast, so we recommend folks chat with a lawyer or accountant to dig into the details of what's right for them." I've personally seen a lot of folks asking for LLC support from Stripe for a long time on Indie Hackers and Hacker News and elsewhere, so it's pretty awesome to see them launch it and to support that launch so well. Check the show notes for the link.
We've now recorded over 2 weeks of daily podcasts and are starting to fall back on our backgrounds as growth engineers to ask the question, how do we grow our audience? It turns out this is a tough nut to crack in the podcasting universe. Accountable metrics are hard to come by, and discovery is sometimes driven by podcast players, which keep their featured podcast lists months old. So we're going to try running a new experiment, this time for podcasters. We're calling it PodSwap. PodSwap is a place podcast creators can find other creators to cross-promote their podcasts. We've heard over and over again that cross-promotion is one of the most effective ways to grow your audience, but we haven't found any great tools to do it. So we're building this for ourselves and all of the other podcast creators out there who want to grow their audience. You can sign up for the beta launch at podswap.co. That's podswap.co.
That's all for Hacker Daily today, Tuesday, May 1st. As always, we want to make Hacker Daily better every day, and we can't do it without your feedback, so please reach out to us via email at info@hackerdaily.co or follow us on Twitter with our new username, Hacker Daily. It's pretty awesome. And we'll be back tomorrow with more updates for hackers, founders, and makers. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great Tuesday.